everyone, and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm Nicole Kamanjian. I'm here with Cody Richard and the host of this show, Jeff Rappaport. This is episode 229, and today we have a special guest, Eric Sage, who is going to be covering using notes to succeed in today's real estate market. While listening to this episode, if you guys have questions, please head over to the Creative Financing Podcast Facebook group. If you're not part of the community, just search the Creative Financing Podcast in Facebook and ask to join. There will be a live session on the second Thursday of every month, so bring your questions. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can ask your questions in the comments below. Lastly, we want to thank you for subscribing, liking, and sharing this podcast with your friends.
If you've been following us the last couple of episodes, we had Nick Legamaro on, and now we have Nick's partner, Eric. And when I say Nick's partner, maybe Nick is your partner, Eric. I'm not sure how that works, but absolutely no offense. The reason that I wanted to have you on separately is that we have had hour plus long conversations just about creative financing and things that we can do. And we have a similar thought pattern, I think. So I thought this would be a great time to introduce you. And you're one of my coaches, one of my mentors. And it's super special to have you on. Thank you for coming.
Cool. Yeah, thanks for having me. I obviously love having conversations with you. We could do this for hours just because we kind of love what we're doing. And it's funny. So I turned 50 years old this week.
Happy birthday.
And we're recording this in July of 2022. And I was on a trip and with my family. And I was working out and I had this like epiphany. I'm like, okay, if I walk down the beach and I see someone that looks older than me, if I stop them and ask them, you know, I turned 50 this week. Could you give me some advice from 50 years and older? Right. And so I started just gathering all this information. And my wife's just like laughing at me. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. And so I just thought it was an interesting conversation about what the next 50 years is. And one of the best advices I got, or mostly a lot of advice I got, was do what you love. You know, I talked to a doctor. I mean, this guy was 57 years old. He said, I've been a doctor for a long time. I retired. And I'm actually going to go back to school and teach because I like to teach. I love that. And so I know that, Jeff, I know that you love what you do. Yep. And I love what I do. And they said, do you like what I go? I love what I do. I really enjoy doing what I do. And as I've gotten older, I've gotten a little more niche in what I do and providing homeownership for people that aren't able to have homes or qualify for the traditional mortgage has always been something that I enjoy doing. And so anyway, that was kind of ideal. But a little background about me is I got into real estate randomly. I went to the University of Arizona. I played on a college golf scholarship there. My dream in life from when I was younger to be a pro golfer. And so I put all my energy and into that. I was blessed to have a sponsorship when I graduated from college. And I got to play professional golfer for 3 years. The reason I retired from that was financial. Number one, because I didn't make enough money to support myself. And two, I really didn't like the travel. I really appreciate the guys in any pro sport or any job where you are gone a lot. And so after that, I had a couple corporate jobs, but I fell into real estate. I bought my first rental in 2003, bought my first real investment property and started doing this full time in 2004. I had a mentor that taught me about pre-foreclosures, which was door knocking pre-foreclosures. Houses, if you're unaware of that, and people that get behind on their mortgages. And I would go find them at the very beginning when their notice was filed and at the very end. And I would introduce myself and see if I could help them solve their problem. And so I just happenstance, my very, very first door that I knocked on was in my neighborhood. It was an ex-NFL football player.
Oh, wow.
And so if you, I don't know if you, so what happened was, is a friend of mine that I golfed with, he sent me a list of pre-foreclosures that he was like, you should look into this. And I'm like, okay. So I took the list, and at 3 o'clock, I would get off my job in the medical field, and I would just go door knock. And so I found this house that was in foreclosure. I door knocked it. This humongous guy answers the door and looks at me. He's like, what do you want? I'm like, hey man, I think your house is going to foreclosure in a couple of days. And if it's okay, is there anything I can do to help you? And he goes, no, it's taken care of. And keep in mind, I really didn't understand what the foreclosure was. I had zero idea how I was going to help him, but I knew that there was a problem, and I would just figure it. I mean, that's just what I did. I had to help solve problems. So he slammed the door in my face. I went back to my car. I tore off a piece of paper. I had no business cards. I mean, I was working for a medical company in the long-term care facilities is what I called on. And I had my, you know, the medical company car was a Ford Taurus. So I went back to my Ford Taurus and I pulled out a piece of paper, wrote my name and phone number on it, went and door knocked him again and said, hey man, if something changes, give me a call. So fast forward till that night, and his wife calls and says, yeah, I have a problem. We're 58,000 behind on our mortgage. We're going to lose our house. We had to file bankruptcy. Our bankruptcy was dismissed, and it's actually going to go to auction on Tuesday. Because it was a 3-day weekend.
Well,
and so I said, okay. I said, well, how about, let's get together. How about tomorrow at 1 o'clock? She said, great. So I set an appointment for tomorrow, that Saturday at 1 o'clock. And I called my realtor that sold me my first rental property and says, hey man, I have this house that's going to foreclosure in our neighborhood here in Tempe, Arizona. And what do you think? And he's like, I don't know. I'm a real estate. I don't know what foreclosures are. Right. And so, but as you know, a blessing or whatever you want to call it, I just played golf with a buddy of mine 3 weeks prior in a wedding that I went to high school with. And we go, well, Marty knows something like that. He drives around. He sees that he retired from his camera work job. He was a cameraman for I think Channel 5 News. And he retired. He quit and he's doing real estate. And we weren't exactly sure what he was doing, but I think he's in that business. So sure enough, I call him up, and he lived in the area too, by the way. I call him up and I said, hey man, I got this house. This is the address. He goes, how did you get that address? I've been calling on that house for a year. How did you get that? and you know, what's so cool about it is it's all real estate's about timing, right?
Oh yeah.
And so that was their time. Yeah. And it's so,
it wasn't funny, even their dime until you left the note.
Yeah. Yeah. And so here's where it really gets good. I could go on the story a little bit longer, but the coolest part is Marty became a mentor. He told me exactly what to do. We stopped the house at foreclosure. We drove to the courthouse steps that Tuesday morning. I walked up the steps, gave him a check for $58,000, which I was like, how the heck do you have $58,000 laying around? You know, how did you, you know, private money, the whole deal. And so sure enough, and his daughter was born on Monday, that Monday. So we're the day before, we're trying to get reinstatement figures. We're trying to do all this stuff. He's in labor with his wife. And the coolest part this morning, today, like I'm on Facebook and I'm in a feed. I'm not a huge Facebook guy. And sure enough, there's his daughter, her name's Audrey, was in the feed that she's going, starting her senior year in high school.
Wow.
And that's when that was my very first kind of creative deal. Sure enough, we reinstated the mortgage. We kept the house. We stopped the foreclosure. We kept them in the house, which we typically wouldn't do in today's world. And today that the family we helped still lives in the house today.
Oh, wow.
2004.
That's crazy.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So we saved their house. We worked out a deal. They refinanced, they paid us back. I made my fee and, you know, I made more money part-time working with him, door knocking pre-foreclosures, help bailing people out of their problems than I'd made in my real job. And I had some retirement stuff and I quit and went full-time. My wife did the same. And it's funny because my wife was a financial advisor. She didn't believe in being a financial advisor anymore because of the dot-com bubble. And obviously, Cody, you're quite a few years younger than us, but but she just didn't believe in the the lack of consistency and security that you can get in real estate versus in the stock market. So the stock market works for some people. It doesn't work for me. I don't invest in the stock market or Bitcoin or anything like that. I like
assets. You're happy right now.
Yeah. So that was like, that's my little background on like how I got into creative financing. And you know what the coolest thing is we were right back in that cycle right now. Like if right. I mean, we didn't have the internet back then like we have now. We didn't have statistics. I mean, you can YouTube anything you want and get everything to your fingertips under whatever statistic that you're looking for, from where the rates are, what market you're in. I mean, it's such a, and everyone has it. So there has to be something else that you can provide buyers and sellers that most people won't. And that's why I think we have a leg up in what we do today. And going back to doing what I love, like literally, Jeff, you know, you can find a house, sell it on terms forever, like forever. It'll never change. There are always going to be people that aren't going to be able to get traditional financing. And it's probably going to get harder and harder as the years go on. You know, we'll cycle through it. Rates will drop again, whatever. That's just an opinion thing. So that's kind of a little bit how I got into it. And then obviously now
did your mentor teach you like the strategies, or he's like, hey, Eric, I just want you to door knock. You know, somehow you got this lead, keep bringing them. And
so if, you know, it's really funny. That's a great question. So I'm not obviously afraid to go and talk to people, you know, and just ask them, how can I help you? I mean, there's a lot of really good scripts and stuff. The reality is, tell me what's going on. I probably can fit myself in. And if I can't, I can fit someone else in that can. That's about as simple as my script gets. It's not that hard, you know? And so for me, it isn't. So what he did is we started understanding. We're like, how the heck did you come up with 58,000? You were a cameraman. Your wife doesn't work. Like, where do you get all this money? Like, because he was doing a lot of deals, right?
Yeah.
And so he was just raising private capital. You know, that's how he got his money. And so, you know, he raised enough to reinstate. He raised enough to pay some of his marketing dollars. He raised enough to pay me my wholesale fee. Basically back then I didn't know I was wholesaling when I was and gave himself a few bucks and then created a term and then helped his people get out of their issues. And because the reality is, back then, if you had a heartbeat and 6 months of payments, you could refinance your property. And so that model worked really, really well for us. But so then he taught me, I had a relationship, a partnership with him. And then after a while, I had my own money, I had my own lists, and I could go do it on my own. And so that's what I did. We left on good terms. He made a bunch of money. But here's the thing, after the year is, you know, he started out in his Honda Civic, you know, or a Honda Accord or whatever, driving to the courthouse steps. And then a few months or so later, he had a new Mercedes. And then he had an AMG. And I'm like, dude, you can't drive the AMG to our appointment. I'm going to drive my Civic. And we're going to go do our thing. And in fact, you don't even need to go to the dang appointments anymore. I'm just going to hand you contracts all day long. And it worked out because like he needed contracts and he had the money. And so then I figured out how to raise private capital. My wife she left her financial advising company. She went, became a, she created, she started a hedge fund with a trader. She had a really, really smart, her trader was a rocket scientist. And he was doing really well trading, right? But when he started trading other people's money, he changed the way he thought. And so he stopped. And so she raised a bunch of money and then they ended up closing their hedge fund down. And she went to work for a self-directed IRA company here in Phoenix called Vantage IRA. Actually, it was InTrust and then now it's Vantage. But that's how we learned how to raise private capital. I literally would go and sit and I would sit in the room and listen to their presentations. And then people would ask me what I do. And then they would just give me their money, because the reality is they didn't want to go do what I did. They didn't want to pull the list. They didn't want to go door knock. They didn't want to do the marketing. They didn't want to talk to sellers. They didn't want to do any of that other than get a fair rate of return. But back then I was paying my second lien lenders for reinstating loans, like 18%. And we were making tons of money at 18%. So
rates were higher than back then.
They were deferred. They were deferred, and I was doubling my money. So there's plenty of money to be made. I wouldn't pay that now. I don't need to. So to answer your question, yeah, he taught me the business. I learned, we made money together, and then I went out on my own. I mean, it was a pretty simple transition for me. Yeah.
And it sounds like you've been doing creative financing from the very beginning, or you do have a period where you did primarily cash offers, but it sounds like.
So I bought my very first rental property. I paid retail. I got a traditional loan. I put my 20% down. I used a realtor. My friend was the realtor on the buy side, and my other friend was the listing agent. I paid full price. I didn't make any cash flow. And the money I made was the appreciation on the property, which I would not do now. I mean, I actually have a friend of mine right now. He's like, I'm just buying assets. I don't really need to cash flow. It's not a big deal to me because I have other assets and income coming in. I personally wouldn't do that anymore. The cash flow is so important to me. But I mean, I went from door knocking pre-foreclosures to, yes, I did some cash deals. But that was my thing. Like, it's so funny. I was talking to my wife. I go, I didn't know any better other than we're going to reinstate your loan, keep you in your house, and you're going to refinance in 12 to 24 months. That was it. That's all that. That's what I sold. That was it. I didn't know there was a cash offer model. I didn't know anything else. And so that's what I sold. And so I feel like going back to that simple model and saying, this is what we're going to do. We're going to keep your mortgage in place because it's an asset in today's world. These are variable interest rates back then, right? Like, they started out at 3 or 4 or 5 or 6, and they just kept going up, and no one knew what the number was. Now we have 30-year fixed mortgages that are not changing.
The option arms where you could pay interest or pay 15-year, or you can pay fully amortized. Yep.
Yeah. So now when I talk to sellers or I have people that I work with that talk sales, like, I let them know, like, your sellers need to understand that asset is their loan. Mm-hmm. That loan is their asset. So let's make money together. Typically, I don't love doing that with consumers, but I think I have an obligation, not an obligation, but I feel like my knowledge and expertise can really help them make some extra money by doing that, by keeping that in place. And when we know our exit, we're going to exit to a seller finance buyer, you know?
Yep.
So
yeah. But where did it go after that? So then you went on your own and you continued to do pre-foreclosures. Cause I know at some point you branched out in a lot of different ways. And
yeah, that's a good question. So there was a time where we're door knocking my team. So here's what happened. I was door knocking. It got so competitive in Phoenix, Arizona. I'd show up to a house and there'd be three other people lining up to show, because we would get this secret notice that no one had until everyone had it. And so we would show up to a house and there'd be three cars there. And there would be all my competitors, door knockers, work. And I'd show up, I'd say, hey, these guys behind me that are sitting in their cars waiting to talk to you, like, they work for other people. It's my money. It's my houses. This is what I'm doing. Let's all just come on in and sit on the couch and see who can make you the best offer. And they appreciated it. Right. Wow. And then we would leave, and then I would hire them to work for me because I'd pay more, and then they would go work for me. And I'd go, that's what I did. But there was a time where there was no more equity. And I didn't really understand. I didn't do a lot of direct mail. There was a ton of houses free and clear, right? There still is a ton of houses free and clear in the country, right? Huge percentage, 30, 40%. Yeah. Someone told me 33% of all homes in the U.S. are free and clear. I think it's a lot higher than that, personally.
I've heard 35, but yeah. It's very possible, especially after this kind of windfall of money over the last few years.
Yeah. So anyway, there's a lot. There's enough, right? So all of a sudden there's no more equity. There's no more equity in these houses. Like, how I would door knock and there wouldn't be enough equity to make the deal work. Right.
Yeah.
And so my wife's been my business partner since day one. I said, what are we going to do? There's no more equity in these houses. And I didn't know to just search for cash free and clear houses either at the time. I had my specific little niche list. That's all I focused on. Right.
And was very
successful with it. And so finally we're like, okay, there's going to be a massive problem here. Everyone's upside down. Now what? And so we started a short sale company. So we had anywhere from we started a loss mitigation company that helped people. We charged them to basically short sell their house. Okay. It got to the point where it wasn't that cost effective because the banks didn't know what they were doing. So I'd be 6 months into someone that paid me $2,500 to short sell their house. And so finally we're like, okay, we're done with that. We're just going to buy all these houses. So we would have 125 to 150 short sales going at any given time. I had a full staff, all these people calling on, saving people's houses. And so we had a short sale business. We bought a bunch of houses that way. We short sell a lot, but then we got to the point where we're like, okay, market's pretty flat. It's down there. Let's just buy all these houses that were 240, 250 that are worth 25, that are selling for 25 to 100,000 now. Like literally 25% of what the mortgages were, we were buying these houses.
Yep.
So we bought as many as we could. We didn't buy enough.
You're still working in Arizona, right?
Still just in the Arizona market. Yep. That's it. And so, we ended up having the short sale business. It went really well. We bought a bunch of properties, and then that leveled off. And then we started short selling, fix and flipping, buy and holding. We've done probably 1,000 transactions doing that. And then, but what I went back to over the last probably 4-5 years was what did I love to do? I loved finding a great deal, which is what I was really, really good at. I hated rehabbing. I didn't like being a landlord. Although I am a little bit right now, but I don't have a ton, but I liked, bringing people into these houses that weren't able to have traditional home ownership and provide home ownership and not have to deal with the asset anymore. I was just the bank. And so that's where I transitioned now. So now we have anywhere from 85 to 100 notes or assets that we currently own and collect money on. And now we consult, you know, just like, Jeff does. And we just share our story and what we're doing. And that's how Nick and I became business partners. Cause we met at a mastermind probably 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And then we're like, man, you know, he's got a different unique ability than I do. So it fits. And so now we consult, we try to buy some notes, and, that's kind of what we do.
So when did you get into the actual, like either creating notes or buying notes? How long has it been since you've actually been doing that part of the business?
I've been doing that for about 5 years. Yeah. Yeah. So buying a house wholesale, selling it retail, getting a down payment, and creating a note. And it's like Nick and I talk about the $6 million mistake that he made. I did too, I guess, but I didn't sell my notes. I kept them. So yep. I didn't really have that mistake, but I just created one note rather than a first and second. Sure. And that's why I love the first and second, especially now, because even if you take over payments or you get a seller to carry the note, you know, be the seller finance seller,
yep.
And you wrap it and you do all that stuff, the first and second gives you a bunch of different exits. And that's what I love about our model that we do now. And you're protecting the borrower, you're protecting the seller. If there is a due on sale clause, if you do take a house subject to,
yep.
I'm not truly worried about a subject to house being called due. It will happen. It's not a huge fear to me right now. Honestly, I think there's going to be more people worried about, the banks are going to be worried about the people not paying than the ones that are. So I don't even think they have a department for paying how people that are making mortgage payments that aren't on title.
Does it truly make any sense to you, Eric, that banks call loans due? I mean, when you think of what they have to do to call a loan due. So if I'm buying your house and I buy it subject to, right, and you're going to leave the loan in place, you're still liable for that loan. Yet I must have something in this, right? So now I have a vested interest in making sure this loan gets paid. So now the bank
has two people.
Right.
And you have two people. Then you have three people.
That's right. And what do banks want? Do they want real estate? No, they want payments, right? They want the payments. And for them to actually call the loan due, they would have to say, Jeff, we're not going to accept your payment any longer. Here, you can have it back. Now we're going to take our performing asset and make it a non-performing asset, which penalizes us. And people say, well, they want you to refinance into a higher rate. Why do you think they're going to get the loan? If they just, they're going to force foreclosure on the due on sale clause, well, why would you refinance with them?
Right. Right. No, I think, and obviously the market changes. Like I'm looking at opportunities that come right now, or I'm seeing some stagnation in a few assets just in my local area, that I'm going to make them offers that I want. Like this is what I tell everybody. everyone that I talk to is I'm going to make the offer that works for me. And if it works for you, great. And if it's close, fine. But this, because we, I think we can, I don't think it's going to last forever. I think we're going to see a little bit of a shift where people have fear, right? When, just like when the pandemic hit. I mean, why didn't we go buy hundreds of properties during the pandemic? Because we weren't sure, right?
No one wasn't even sure if anyone would let you see their house anymore.
So, So that I think there's going to be an opportunity for when I really started the business. And I think I have a little bit better systems now on how to do it and how to take over payments and protect the seller and protect us the best we can. There's no guarantees in any, in anything that we do.
So when did you, when did you get to purchasing properties outside of Arizona? And then I know that you kind of like some multifamily units too. Well, when did that come in and why?
Well, so I love, so here's the great thing about when I went outside of the Arizona and started buying in multiple kind of virtual, right? There were note opportunities. And so I have a system and a process for the note opportunities. So if there is a default, I just call one person and they have everything. You know Dickie Baldwin, right? With Baldwin Associates.
I know that name.
Yeah, I think I've shared it with you guys before, but he's kind of the guy that I would call for anything. Do I need a drive-by? Do I need an inspector? Do I need an attorney for that city? I have everything. And so that's insurance, whatever. I feel comfortable buying out of state for that reason. That's why I did it. And obviously my market was getting really inflated in Phoenix, and the math for a traditional seller finance deal when the median home price for that model was in the 400 plus range and people were going to have to put $80,000 to $100,000 down, and I was going to charge them, you know, anywhere from 9% to 10% interest. The affordability kind of went away. My margins went down. So I just searched out other opportunities. Although I am coming back around into the Phoenix market again, because I think the people love Phoenix. I think it's a great market. I think the buyers that I'm looking for have the down payment. They have the income. They'll go out and our borrowers don't have a choice to go get another loan. So they don't want to lose the house and go rent when they know that they could go do something and make that payment. And so that's why I like my market where I'm at now, but I'll do it in any market. You can sell or finance in any market.
And I'm going to ask you pretty much the exact question in our next episode about what you just talked about in dealing with, you know, owner finance with selling the note works really well in a certain price range when you in certain markets, not every market. But there's still opportunities. And so I want to delve into that a little more in our next episode. Cody, do you want to ask Eric anything? And we'll start to wrap this up. And the next episode will be a whole bunch of Q&A with Eric.
Yeah, so I have a couple short questions. So I was curious. So it sounds like you're not nationwide, just in a few select markets. And do you have
team members? Actually, that's not true. I have assets in 24, 25 different states.
Gotcha.
And you go there because of the notes, right? Not because of the properties,
right? Yeah.
Gotcha. And is your team all based with you? And then I believe Nick was in Texas, correct? Or is it just spread throughout?
The cool thing about me is my wife's my business partner. I would consider her the rainmaker. Nick and I have a separate business. We have our note business that we focus specifically in Arizona and Texas. And we have a consulting business, coaching business, you would call it, that teach people how to create a buy wholesale, sell retail, create a first and second, sell the first, keep the second, and have no debt, right? No risk when it comes to that. So that's what we do. But I have an assistant that helps me with my notes, and my wife and me, and I have some just general contractors that I work with that aren't employees. And so I have a very small team. And that's why I like notes, because I don't need my servicer. My servicer, I have three different servicers. I get my reports every month, and it's been really good. I don't take back a lot of properties. The ones I take back are the ones that I didn't create from scratch. the ones I create from scratch are really, really good payers. They're really good payers.
And are you buying any of your or finding any of your own deals? Or are you primarily going through wholesalers at this point?
I was going to ask.
So good question. So right now I get most of our deals through consulting and teaching people what to do and basically JVing or buying the properties. I had a guy today that we're consulting with. He's in New York and he's in Florida. Investors in New York has 10 properties. And he was asking me if I wanted to buy those notes. And I said, personally, I don't want to be in New York. But what I did recommend, I tell everyone, this is what I do. You can do whatever you want, but this is what I do. I'm not telling anyone what to do or how to do it. I'm telling what works for me. And so what works for me in New York is sell all those assets and go buy in Texas or Arizona, because you're going to have some cash, you have some liquidity, and the opportunities are there too. So that's my opinion, but there are note buyers in New York and New Jersey. They're just not friendly for banks and landlords. So you might as well.
New York is not owner finance friendly.
No.
And there are states like that are, you can do it. If you can find someone that'll close it.
I have assets in New York and New Jersey, and I don't, I bought them so right. And I get paid and they're good. Here's the thing about what we do now. When we find a seller finance buyer, that seller finance buyer, they're not worried about politics. They're not using the system. They're just so blessed to have a home for their family and do what it takes. So if I did tell them what to do and how to do it there, it would work just fine, because they're gonna search for that right seller finance buyer. Every market's different. Every market has its own that demographic that will work for what we're talking about.
Yep.
I just read an email or a post on Facebook the other day about I'm not discriminating against anybody on who the seller finance buyers are, but they do have to qualify and put a down payment and have a show the ability to pay.
Yep.
Yeah. But it's scalable, right? Like you can, to have 100 single family homes. I'm just talking to a buddy of mine. He has 100 single family homes spread out in like 4 or 5 different states. It's an absolute nightmare. Yep. I'm like, dude, just sell them on terms.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about them anymore. They're not going to they could vacate. You might have to foreclose or all that other stuff, but you're not dealing with the little things that go on. And this is there are tax benefits for being an owner, right?
Yeah.
But that's why we have, when you said multifamily, that's why I look for multifamily, because they get all the tax benefits for multifamily, two to 200, 300 doors under in one location is a little bit more efficient. You know what I mean? I think, but there's going to be some opportunities in multifamily because rates have gone up, man. Cap rates are going to, I mean, you're seeing it. They're compressed. Like if you're a buyer of multifamily right now and the seller is not offering terms or even know it exists, like this is the greatest opportunity. You're listening to this podcast or watching it. If you don't, take all this in and become or just knowledgeable that you can be the bank, not only that, turn your seller into the bank. Turn the seller finance, turn your multifamily buyer seller into the bank. You're doing them a huge favor, number one, and you don't have to go get financing. And then you're going to give them a stream of income for however long that you want to do the term, right?
Yep.
You know, and then we all know that the minute we get a seller to give a seller financing at today's rates or lower, I mean, that's the biggest asset you could ever have, because there will be an event and you might be able to get it at a discount from there as well.
I don't know why everyone just doesn't do that. I think, yeah, but when a seller asked me, we just had a lead that a seller said, I want 4 points over prime. And I'm like, well, are you a bank? When did you become the bank? the reason that we want to create financing is it's advantageous for us. If we're still willing to pay, 5, 6, 7%, but we better be getting it a really good deal, or else that does not make that much sense. Why would we pay more than we could actually pay going and getting a traditional loan? I have a 68-unit A-class building that I will get a signed contract on tomorrow or Monday that I negotiated 10 years principal-only payments. On a $7 million property. So it is shifting and we'll continue to see things kind of shift where you and I have been using creative finance when the market was outstanding, right? Where, and people would always ask, well, why would a seller do that? Well, why would a seller sell cheap to a wholesaler? Same reason.
Timing.
Right. But now that there'll be some added pressure, some external things that will make them a little more open to looking at terms and being able to potentially just even get out of their property, more debt relief than we've seen
over the last 2 years. Two points on a cap rate on $7 million is a deal breaker.
Right.
There's no value add. It's a deal breaker. So it's like, hey, how about I do this? You give me a little of this. I'm going to go value add. And now that deal that you just got it. Now you guess what you get. So how much? So whatever it is, 5 million, 6 million, whatever the number is that they're giving you 0% interest.
Yep.
That's worth so much money. You know why? Because you're going to go, you could, when the rates clean up a little bit, refinance and go take that debt and put it on other assets at 0%. People don't know that when you write that note on a seller finance deal, you're going to write it with all the options that you ever thought about. And we're going
to talk about, that's one of my questions to you for next episode. I want to know what clauses are that you want to put in notes. So,
Yep, for sure.
All right, Cody, anything else? And we'll wrap this episode up.
No, I think I'm all good for this one.
Great. All right. Well, stay tuned. The next episode's going to be a doozy. Go out and create some terms.
Awesome.